of bread. Mother said they knew that they journeyed. She dried lots of bread, dried it. In big, she had about 2 gunny sacks, and then they would some. I don't know how they died. My 2 brothers died on the way. One brother died. He was okay one day, and the next day he was dead. And they had to bury him there somewhere on the roadside. And then they took, when my mother got in labor, then like now ambulance or wagons or something. So my father and his father, my uncle, they took my mother and carried her to the hospital. And I am the only one born in a hospital from 10 kids. See, that was in a town, so that's I'm born in a hospital. And then when they came back where they used to live before, you know, before they went to Russia, that was all destroyed. So I know that house, they called it Jan. There was 4, I would say that was maybe not as big as here, your house, here, half of the size.
Half the size, yeah, that's about all.
And that's, then they brought my mother there, and I don't know, and there was 4 families living in that little house. And I don't know if there was a wooden floor, maybe a dirt floor, that I don't know. My mother was laying somewhere, she was sick. And they didn't have no cows, they didn't have no milk, you couldn't buy nothing. So 2 ladies, that Mrs. Jan, where they stayed there in that house, her child was 10 months older, Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the Strimmelbrenner, you know, Emil. He was 11 months old, so those 2 ladies took turns. They came and nursed me to keep me alive. But my mother was sick, she didn't have no milk. To keep me alive, when I grew up, you know, I had 3 mothers. They always were saying, oh, you're my daughter, I nursed you. And I felt foolish, you know. And it is quite, and some people, they started, I don't know how they got, and I know my parents, their first house was a little sod house, I remember that.
A sod house?
Yeah, sod house, yeah.
Yeah, when they came back from Siberia?
No, they first lived with those Jans.
After they came back from Siberia?
Yeah, they lived with Jans.
That's what I said.
And then my grandparents, your grandparents, their home was destroyed. And then, of course, there was the Grandpa Belter, what's on the picture, and my father and his father. And they were growing young people. So they caught, and I got picture. I didn't find that picture. They saw, like, there was a big log, there was a big sawhorse, and there was one on top of it, and that was your father and my father.
I have that picture.
And they kind of, you know, one pole is up there, pulls it up, and the one in the bottom pulls it down. And that's what they caught, some logs, and then they built the house, and then the whole shebang, like the Belters, lived there with the grandparents. And then after, then they kind of, I don't know how they got this piece of land. I guess it was something. There was a lady, and I far remember her. She was from France. Madame?
From France.
Yeah, she was a French lady, and she had some, and she helped lots of those poor Germans. And that something had to do with they got that land. And our grandfather, he kind of gave my father a piece, your father a piece, and Uncle Heinrich and Rudolf and Erich.
He had 5 boys, and he divided up a piece of land in 5 parcels.
So everybody...
Is that the farm that's mentioned in here?
No, it's a different farm. That's a farm that was given to us in 1940. When we came from Poland to the German occupied Poland. Germany occupied Poland in 17 days. you know, the Second World War, yeah?
Yeah.
So after the German-Polish War, we lived in Poland, but the Russian troops marched in our area.
Yeah.
They gave that, the Germans gave that to the Russians, that part of the land. But the deal was made that Stalin was in order then.
Yeah.
He sent all the German people out, free to go.
Oh no, they made agreement.
They made an agreement that to release the German
Stalin
people.
Made agreement.
And it was 2.7 million, I was told, of us.
They let you live.
That moved out from the Ukraine part into the, from, it was both Poland, you understand? The river Bug was the borderline. It was Ukraine, Poland, and Old Poland. Germany took in Old Poland, right to that river, and Russians took in the new part of Poland, where we lived. After the Russian troops came in, we were allowed to leave. So Hitler took us into the Old Poland part, took the old Polish farmer off, his farm, and put us on.
Well, he sent the Poles to Warsaw, settled
them
there.
He sent the old people,
yeah,
to a camp. They were in camp during the war, the old Polish folks. The younger ones, he took to Germany to work.
I got that all written when you read that.
And when I was there in 1989,
tie into the same time. Right. The family was
when
there.
I was, yeah, that when I was in 89, I was in Poland. We went to Poland. In 89, we traveled 10 countries in Europe. And Poland was the 11th. So I rented a car in West Germany, went all the way to Poland, and I went all the way to that yard where we used to live during the war, on that Polish farm. And the Polish farmer, the son was alive. He was 72 years old at the time. The old Poles had passed on already. And I told him that I used to live during the war here in this house, and my name is Belter. And he asked me, the sun was just about going down, you know, when I got there. And he asked me if I have a place to sleep. And I said, no. I said, I must look for. I knew the next city was about 6 miles away. I have to talk to them with miles, Marta, because they're Americans, so they still have miles. So anyhow, and the Pole says, no. He says, you got to sleep in this house tonight. So Sarah was kind of a little uneasy, you know. She was afraid. She was kind of scared a bit. But they were very friendly to me, I would say. So before we went, well, they gave us supper right away. And then he says, one of your workers that used to work for us during the war for 5 years, the 5 years that we were there, he says he lives nearby here. And his name was Joe, Józef in Polish, yeah? And I said, okay, we have to visit him. So 10 o'clock, I took that Pole in the car and Sarah, and away we went to visit that guy that used to work for us. Marta knows him too. And he was in bed already. And I knew his wife, she used to work for another German farmer during the war, and them two got married. Eh? So the daughter-in-law came out, and I, as little Polish as I told him that Joe used to work for us on the farm. And I said, I'm here from Canada. And he recognized me. And of course, we had a nice evening, you know, and then he went back to the same farm again. We slept. And the next day, we made agreement with Sarah, and I said, okay, tomorrow, I said, we're going to go to the place where she lived during the war. And so it was about 60 miles away, roughly. So we drove up there, and I had to laugh. Sarah always said there was a big ditch, you know, and there was a fire hall, and the ditch was hit that wide. It was all grown shut during the wars, during the years. Before, it was a big ditch where they used to take the fire water in case there was a fire in the city, in town. So they took the water from there, from that ditch, and to extinguish the flame, eh? But the ditch, honestly, it was that wide. I jumped right across. It was all grown shut. But anyway, we got to that house, and the daughter was alive too. But she said she heard about the Sarah, that there was a Sarah on that yard during the war. That meant Sarah, yeah? But they didn't know each other, you know, so. But she was friendly too. So, but before we went to that farm, we had a neighbor lady in Edmonton, and she had a cousin in that same town. She says, when you go to that city, Shattuck, look up my cousin. And she gave us the address, yeah, his name and the address. And the guy was 83 years old, and he had a fourplex. And they were renovating, and he was a widower, and he was trying to give us something to eat, you know, make us something to eat. And I said, no. I said, isn't there a restaurant here? A coffee shop or whatever, you know? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. I said, put yourself with different clothes on. He was cleaning up the brickwork. So we went to that coffee shop, and and we ordered a meal, and it was cabbage soup. First, she asked me if I want, you don't know that soup, but Martha does. In the old country, they used to take the guts from the pig and cut them in chunks. You know, the intestines?
Yeah, all the water.
Needle borscht.
Yeah, you know, that's a little bit different.
Well, okay.
Takes lots of cleaning. You
yeah, but there. Anyway, yeah, but I'm trying to make the story short. Not
yeah.
to clean them. But anyway, they clean the guts first, and then they cut them in chunks, and they make a soup out of it. And she asked me if I wanted that soup. And I remember that name, and I said, no way. I said, I don't want no flaka zupa. That was... So then she gave us some cabbage soup. And, of course, when Sarah got her plate, there was a big fly in there, drowned already in that soup, so she didn't eat it. And then they gave us a hamburger with a fried egg on top of it, and I ate that. Well, I had to eat something, eh? So, and there was some Polish people in there, and they found out that we're Canadians. So instead of sitting and at their table, we were in the back there, you know, eating their soup. They all turned around, had their plate and on their lap, and looking at us, and we were talking to one another as much as we could. We had a great evening, great experience there.
Oh. Now, where is that today? That's place.
That's Poland now.
That is Poland.
That now
today, where we used to live during the war,
belongs to
that is Poland. That's state Poland.
No. Volinian is Ukraine now.
No, I'm talking about Wartegau.
Yeah.
Talk about where we used to live during the war.
Okay.
From 1940 till 45. That is Poland.
Okay.
Yeah,
whatever the Germans occupied, the Poles got back. But whatever the Russians took, our home, birthplace, it was Poland then, but it's Ukraine today. It's under Russian control.
I went back in 91.
She was there.
Okay.
And
when she went there, there was nothing to find. No house,
back.
No nothing.
I went on
neither their
tour,
house or our house.
Tour guide.
It seemed like your
we
dad
don't
was
want
trying
to see
leave.
Like history
Russian,
or something. We want
to
see
Russians
our own
told him
home
to go
place.
Back.
And he took
so
us.
After they
wow.
caught up with us.
So I found.
Yeah, we were
I
escaping. We were gone
Ukrainian
already a few days on the road.
Volkosha,
two teams.
Are there.
I was driving one team and dad was driving another team.
She was same
and
age.
When the Russians
cut
up to us, they chased us back.
And I came there and I talked.
Where we came from.
She
so
was
we
in the garden.
Back,
first
we
went to village and asked
far.
For so and so, and there was her son in the yard. And then he came in our panel, and then we drove, and she was in the garden.
And mom carried on.
I said, he's an Irishman there, and I talked here and there.
She went back.
Said,
I don't
no.
know who was driving, maybe one of my sisters.
When I said
the
interpreter came, we had
she
interpreter.
With horses.
With the horses, yeah. There's
lots of crying
yeah.
and laughing.
Oh, when it said wagons, I thought
I got pictures
wagons.
Of them.
No, there was no such
wow.
thing. No. Everything was yeah. the horse and buggy. Horse
what
and,
city is
and,
it nearby
wow.
today?
Farm wagons, eh?
City?
No. Nobody had cars.
Not nearby. That would be
so
Lutsk.
So she managed to go to go about another
20 kilometers.
Too bad
I didn't bring that book.
Before
got
she got stranded and the Russians took the horses away from her.
In English.
Threw the harness off.
Lutsk,
jumped on the horse bareback.
Or Ravno. That Ravno is from my birthplace in Izbor, about 60,
and she was
65
she was
kilometers.
She was with the children at that farmyard.
Oh, okay.
And when
Ravno.
I got released from prison,
yeah.
Well, I knew she was.
No,
she
that
wasn't
was,
going to get far. I knew that because I've seen.
I think
Russian
he should have a book, and I wrote a short story about
the
everything.
Wagon,
short.
Thrown off,
this
on
is, but
and,
it's longer.
So
I in the book.
Okay. I knew Mom would be
I don't know,
way.
I can't talk.
I'm gonna,
to
I'm,
so
I'm gonna get a copy of that.
When
I'm gonna
when
take
I,
it
well,
to the phone.
And then I wrote
and
in this is a
Blyman
here where we live,
the
history
back, you know,
book.
I went back the same road
and
as
see
as
everybody
when
wrote and I had somebody
west,
write my story and that is up to
trying to get home where I came from.
It's dated up to 2000 somewhere.
Whatever I found.
And that's what says, and there says lots that
the
were here.
In prison,
what
I
say,
prison,
it says when you read it,
well,
mostly what we went through, and I tell you, we
people were there, starving like flies.
I had to hurt
but
cattle
I
from 6 years
when I was
on.
In prison.
Just imagine.
And when
7 years
I
hit out. I was hired out.
I could speak the
my,
language.
Mother was very
and
poor.
Was
father was
them.
In
they always used to
Canada.
Say, I'm one of
his
them.
Promised land,
of
and that was the kind
of
bad
he's
time
he's
then
yeah,
when he
he's
came.
He's one of ours. They always said, you know, to them.
And
themselves.
Just think
and
of it about
but in prison, they used
six,
to give us
seven, eight, 9 year old, all day out there. Well,
well
we didn't have lots
of
cattle, maybe three cows or some for somebody else. Some people were nice,
and
some
night,
wasn't.
We only got that was barley coffee.
And you will read that when I fell asleep one place
not,
there,
not
and
beans,
cows,
no
they filled themselves in the neighbor's oats.
Black coffee, that's all. So the people that smoked
oh, that's funny.
In the prison.
Yeah, it was
and
not funny. And then we made it
whatever,
myself. I know
grown.
What is hunger.
And they traded
I know
a piece
to
of
be
bread for that
poor.
Piece of tobacco.
And pushed around,
that's how they became almost like
and
skeleton.
I know, and I
yeah.
say
and
Canada
then,
is a great country.
Well, that's
there
what
is,
I noticed in
and,
here,
and
it said,
will tell you
like,
there when I came to Canada, it's
oh,
quite
great.
A thing to
oh.
me, you know, it's just...
I didn't know where he was.
I
he was
had
still in prison,
everything
and they shipped
behind
him to
what I had known.
Oh, during that time.
See,
when my
you were only together
left,
one day
I
in prison,
crying.
And then they
I,
found
I
out
said,
father and son
going?
Was there.
I don't know nobody.
So then they separated
us.
Oh, on purpose.
The captain,
on purpose,
the captain, the English.
But before we got separated, they questioned my dad first.
Asked that
and then they questioned me.
Talked to me why I'm crying.
And my dad had a lot of cash money on him.
I said, yeah. I said, I don't
escaping.
Know why I'm going where.
Well,
I don't know
during
nobody.
The war,
I
instead of putting the money in the bank, those 5 years that we
and
were farming,
says,
I was the second biggest farm in the community.
And I get
we were
here,
on.
I'm a working
so
person.
So, of course,
it's
income,
I'm
eh?
Going to get
that's
my
race.
Own home.
We were delivering sugar beets and milk and whatever.
And that released my fear.
So all the money, those years, he kept the home.
The same thing.
And then when we were escaping, he put it all on
captain, he gave me
the
courage.
Well,
yeah.
They found all that money, and of
and
course,
I cried,
and
you know, the city
the,
where the ship was leaving,
that
was
no-no.
Bremerhaven.
So then,
just
he
like
was
the whole
to get
city was crying with me.
After he was finished examining.
And when I came, it was.
I come in.
Had quite tough going here. I made
and,
it.
Asked
I
me
thank
how come
God.
My dad had so much money on him, and I
you know,
switched quickly.
You always have to.
And I said, my grandfather
believe
lost
in
7 million rubles.
And you look at things
in Russia, in
and how he led
before
and he protected
during,
us.
Yeah.
That's
during
what
the
I see.
Oh, yeah. The money began
you have to have that.
Yeah, otherwise you
and
can't.
I said, and people that had money in the bank, they couldn't get it out of the bank. The bank wouldn't pay it out. They. So I said,
yeah.
Dad was scared to put it in the bank, so he kept it all at home. And I said, 5 years, it accumulates. And the Russian general bought my story.
Did that keep your dad from getting shot?
Then, my dad was held outside in the hallway, waiting till I finished with my story. And then when I told him about that, and I said he was served under the Tsar's army, you know, and he wasn't a German soldier, was too old. So then the general came out with me. And then at the end, but I was speaking Polish, and the Pole was interpreting in Russian to the general. But I understood every word.
You also spoke Russian, too.
Of course, but at the time I didn't. I just pretended I didn't know. But when the Pole asked me why my dad wasn't in the army, and I said, well, he was 47 years old, and I said we had 9 children in the family and a big farm, and we were still delivering the mail from our village to the next town. We had a contract. So, and the Pole turned around and said, my father was a Nazi, that's why he wasn't in the army. And when he said that to the Russian, then I start speaking Russian. Then I said, he's lying. Well, that Pole just turned as white as that sheet, as that ball. And the Russian took the 2 pistols he had laying on the table, and he pointed at him, and I was hoping he would shoot him, but he didn't. He just, and then he turned the pistols towards me, pointed them at me, and they said, son, tell the truth. And then we both spoke Russian. But the Pole was just shaking. Because he was lying, eh? He was trying to put my dad away. That's what his aim was.
That would have killed him.
That would have killed him, yeah. So then, after I was finished with the general came out with me. I was finished, and they told the guard, he says, don't put him there, put him in room so-and-so, about my dad. So my dad, when he seen me come out, he says, you know, he used to call me by the name Valda instead of Valdemar. You know, my real name is Valdemar, right? So he says, Valda, he says, you know where I'm going. I said, yes, I know. I meant Siberia. And that's where he went. But he later, when we met in 61 here in Edmonton, then he told me the story, how it went, that he was supposed to get shot. Fighting squad, you know.
He thought he was going, but...
Yeah, he thought he was going. And when he said, you know where I'm going, I said, yeah, I know. But
and
I meant Siberia, yeah, and he meant to get shot.
Oh. Well, then
and that's from that day on, I never seen him till Edmonton.
Oh, I thought he came home in a couple years.
Yeah, started. But I was gone.
They sent you off. They told
you. Oh,
to
I
go.
Was already, I already...
It's the war.
No. The war was over.
Oh, okay.
So when before my dad came home from Siberia, see, after I found my mom, we stayed in Poland till 1945 November, and we had a choice to leave Poland. And the Poles were trying to hold it as a secret because it was cheap labor. We didn't pay us, eh? We didn't get nothing. No money, just soup. So they wanted to keep us there. But Stalin, whoever laid out an order, any German wants to go to Germany is free to go at a 15-day time limit. And we found out about it through a couple of girls. The guy at the, what they call it, the unemployment office in English, plain English, yeah, told those 2 girls, you're free to go. And the girls didn't believe him. So this Pole went and got the papers for these 2 girls, ready to go to Germany. And the girls came and told us. And I ran all over with my sister, told everybody else, whatever we knew, the German family was stranded, told them we're free to go. So we all got out in November 45.
How did you get out of there?
By train. My train fare was still free. I became 15 in the meantime. So my train fare was free. But before the Pole took us to the train station, he says, the mother and the rest of the kids can go, but Walter has to stay. And I jumped at the Pole, the farmer. It's not in there. And I said, when the train will leave with my mother on it, I said, your farm will burn. I said, if you trying to hold me back, I warned the Polish farmer. I would have done it too. I would have done anything. And he knew I meant business. So then he made me, in the old country, in fall, when you harvest your potatoes, you put them in a row, like the table there. First you dig a little ditch about that deep. And put the potatoes and then cover them up with straw, and then with dirt, and then straw again, and then dirt again. And I had to cover that row of potatoes before he took us to the train station. And I managed to do that. And as black as I was, as sweated as I was, that's how I went to the train. I wasn't even washed. But he took us there. The Pole took us with the team of horses to the station, yeah.
With your mom?
With my mom and my other sisters and brothers. With Roman, Bruno. Well, there's nothing in there. I didn't.
When did your mom pass away?
1955.
After you were over here?
After I was already here. I had the papers ready for them to come to Canada. Everything was, they were waiting for the ship to leave. And before the ship left, mom died on a blood clot.
How? Just of a blood clot?
Blood clot, yeah. Just like that, yeah. But she was sick before, and then they, in Germany, when you're sick and they think you're going to die, they put you in a dark room. So mom was shoved in a dark room to die with another woman. In the morning, they opened the door. The other woman was dead and mom was still alive. So dad went to the hospital and he seen the performance and he said, well, if she has to die here, you might as well die at home. So he took her home and they went to a doctor that was dealing with herbs, herb doctor. And believe it or not, mom got well. Yeah, so many months later she got well. And she said, well, she's going to go and visit this one woman. Because the woman thought for sure she's dead, eh? Long time. So she visited that woman, and the woman was very happy to see mom. And mom came home that evening, and she missed the bus. And she had to walk 6 kilometers, which is about 4.5 miles. And she was tired that evening, and they went early to bed. And she dreamt around 10 o'clock, she dreamt that Gretchen, that means the one you've seen in the picture, my older sister, daughter, that Gretchen had died. He says, what a dream, you know. And 5 o'clock in the morning, my dad heard the snarling or whatever noise, and he looked, and there she was dead. Yeah, that's when she got the blood clot, you know. So she was dead. And of course, then I already had the papers all ready for them, you know, it's ready to come. So then dad refused to leave Germany after mom died. He died 12 years later.
He came to visit you.
Yeah, then he came. Well, Roman.
Did he stay?
Roman wrote him a letter that we're going to get him over here on holiday, but he didn't tell me about it. So, of course, all of a sudden, I heard that dad is coming, but Roman had no money for the ship. And I said, Roman, I said, you asked dad to come. I said, where's the money? So I paid for the ship, and I kind of put him in a spot. But I didn't pay for the train fare from Quebec down here to Edmonton. So I said, Roman, I said, dad is on the ship already. It takes 9 days, you know, to get across. I said, you better wire that money over. I said, because otherwise they keep him in Quebec. I would have sent the money anyway. But, and he borrowed the money from somewhere. And
we could have found
So dad came over, you know.
But then after he came over, how long did he...
Well, he had the visa for 363 days. One day less than a year. He could have stayed just about 1 year. But after 3 months, he took off. He says, enough Siberia.
He went back to Siberia.
No, he went back to Germany. He says Edmonton is just like Siberia.
Aww.
You know, the scenery,
that pretty, yeah.
The poplar trees and the swamp trees, what have you, the swamp spruce.
Bad
memories, yeah. And then what he couldn't get over, one neighbor was a Frenchman next door, and the other one across the alley was a Ukrainian. In front of me, another Ukrainian. And so he couldn't cope with that. And he tried everything to get me back, for me to sell the house and come back. You know, and he was always figuring, when I come back, because that time for one Canadian dollar, I could have $4.25 German.
Because he wanted his old familiar Germany. That's where he was.
Yes, yeah. He wanted me to come back home, you know. But Sarah would never leave because her family was here. Eh? They immigrated in 1950. She came with the whole family, yeah. I come in 49. I was 19. Not a word of English.
Well, during all this time, when you were over, during the war and when you were on the farm, with the Germans and the Jews and all of that was going on, was that all kind of far away? It wasn't occurring around you?
I tell you the truth, talking about Jews, yeah?
Yeah.
During the war. At first, the Jews, like I said, we delivered the mail from our village to the next town. So the Jews had their store, the Poles had their store, the Germans. But whatever there was a Jewish store was a big sign. Don't buy here. This is a Jewish store. In 1941, 42 already, you know, they were starting. And we used to, when we went to that post office in the city, we unloaded our parcels. The guy came from a different end with a team of horses. He brought them to that post office, and then everything got sorted out. I took my mail back again. But upstairs, there was a Jew living there. He was a tailor. And once in a while, we became friends with that Jew. And we used to go up there and drink some tea, mint tea. Most of them was mint tea. It was cold that day. And I said to Dad, let's get up and have some tea again at that Jew's place. And that was 1943. And when we went up there, the doors were open and no Jew. Yeah, that's when they picked them up.
They took
them out of that area and never seen them again.
And you didn't know where they were taking them.
Nothing.
Then.
We never seen a Jew get killed or taken away. We didn't see none. We didn't see such thing. Not us.
They would do it maybe in the middle of the night or.
That's what they claim. Yeah. So my dad decided he's gone anyway. So he went up in the attic because he was a tailor. He thought maybe whatever he had hidden there, and sure enough, he brought. It was about year round, a whole roll of men's cloth for men's suits. So we brought it, we took it along home because said the Jew is gone anyway.
Cleared
out. So you might as well take it home. But believe it or not, we never made a suit out of that either. It stayed.
Boy, so with the Germans, they would ship them off to Siberia, but with the other people, they'd send them off to the camps, the other camps.
Which ones you're referring to now? I'm trying to get the picture.
Okay, you're talking about two different wars in two different areas.
Yeah, I think you are. World War II. So after the war, that was during the war yet, okay, when they took the Jews away, 1943. The war ended in 45, 2 years later. And that's when we were trying to run west, but 3 days later they had us on. They already cut up to us, or 4 days, whatever it was. And the big joke was, after we turned around, before my dad and I got taken off, the Poles came, the civilians, and they stopped us, and they went through our wagon, our belongings, and they took whatever they wanted, and you couldn't do a thing. You just stood and looked. The Poles were the heroes then, eh? And you didn't dare touch them. Mm-hmm. They would have killed you.
So when did you find out about those concentration camps that were going on at that time?
When I came to Canada. Oh. That's when we found out about everything. Boy. I didn't even know about it.
Did it shock you? Did it shock you?
Well, in a way, but I don't believe it all. I don't believe it all.
Because you were there. I bet you it sounds so.
Yeah, that means we, that 6 million Jews, I should have seen at least one get killed, eh? Or two, three, 10.
You're in the middle of it.
Yeah, I was in the middle of it, and I didn't see none. All I've seen in 1940, when we came from Ukraine to Germany, we were still in camp. And the outhouse, the holes, you know, and one kid, I don't know which side it was, women or men, well, he missed the hole, eh? And he crapped on top of the board.
Yeah.
So a nice lady was walking on the street, Jewish lady, they had to have a star. They already had to have a star on front and back, yellow star. This SS guy, that means one of the top police, army guys, you know, with the skull on their ear, you know. SS they used to call them, the real tough ones. He took the Jewish girl, and we were in camp yet, you know, and I was, what was I, 10 then. I thought, what's he going to do with the girl? Going to rape her? I followed him. He took her to the outhouse, you know. And I thought he was going to rape her. That's what I was thinking at first, you know. But then he took her to the outhouse, and I still see it today. And he made her to pick up that pile of shit, what was there, with her hands, and she had to drop it in a hole, and then she could go again. I just about puked right there then. I was 1940 already.
So you could tell how they were starting to treat him.
Starting to mistreat him, yeah. That was my first performance I seen. But coming back to when I found my mom before we left. Yeah, when I found my mom was stranded on a farmyard. Then the Poles came again. And there was 16 families in that house. And my grandmother was, she couldn't walk. They had to carry her. She was there too, but she died in that camp actually. And then they separated me right away they put me with the man again. Instead of with the, I had two little guys from Russia when I got released from prison. One guy found his aunt in the same house when I found my mom. And another guy kept on going, you know. I gave him that piece of paper. I had a walking paper, like, permission. Because I wouldn't go without it. I told him I'm not going without it. That's another story, actually. I got to admit, tell that. Before I got, when I got released from prison, they told me to go home. And I said, I'm not going home. I said, I'm scared the Poles going to kill me. I was scared of the Poles, not the Russians. A Russian, if he doesn't shoot you when he captures you, after that, you're his friend. He doesn't bother you no more. He'll never mistreat you. But the Pole is a very bad one. So I said, I'm not going. I'm scared.
They're gonna looked at you like maybe a German, because were they fighting against the Nazis anyway?
So the war was still going on.
There was an occupation going on.
Yeah, so they kind of saw you as the other side.
That's right, yeah. So anyway, I told him I'm not going. So then the Russian general told me to go to that police station, which was about 200 yards from prison. And he says, go and get yourself that piece of paper, you know, like a temporary passport. So I went and I had two guys from Russia. They could speak Russian real well too. But they were both 15, but smaller than me. So we walked in. I spoke Polish to that officer, the policeman. And I said, I want to go home. I said, I want my walking paper. So he thought I was one of the Polish workers that used to work for the Germans, and I want to go back home again. That went with the Germans. Like, our guys came with us too, you know, the ones, some of them that worked with us, yeah? They came with us. And then they went back again. But anyhow.
How did you learn how to speak both languages?
You mean German and Polish?
And Russian.
And Russian or Russian. Well, my brother had trained the Russian soldiers in the German army. He was their commander. And when they had leave...
How old was... Well, he was older than you.
Oh, yeah, he was 9 years older again.
Take those towels.
Born 8 years older. He was born in 1922.
Rudolph?
No, my brother, Karl.
But I didn't.
He was a German... Was he like a Nazi
He was in the German army. He was 19 years when he got drafted into the army, yeah?
He probably didn't know it was as bad as it was when he
probably
was
not. But anyway, he was the commander. When the Russians, the prisoners volunteered in the German army, the Russian prisoners, yeah, the Ukrainians actually, because Hitler promised him free Ukraine after the war. So the thousands of them came, joined the German army and fighting the communism. Eh? So anyway, when my brother trained them, when they had leave, well, they had no place to go. So they came. This particular guy came to us on the farm, and my dad could speak Russian, and I could speak Polish because I picked it up from our workers. We had three employed people, you know, on the farm, Polish. They couldn't speak German, so then I kind of mixed it half and half, you know. So that's how I learned my Russian. But anyhow, when I found my mom, then they came and threw us into camp again. I got thrown in with the man, and these two little guys, the 15-year-olds, they were with, well, the one, because the other one kept on going. He got thrown with the women and children, eh? The 15-year-old, and the 14-year-old, he was with the man. And that's when they just about killed me in that camp.
Was it because did you look older? Or
yeah, I looked older. I was bigger, yeah. I was 169 European pounds, so at least 175 Canadian, yeah, roughly speaking. Because so I had to undress, lay down, hands out. One guy stood on my feet, one on my hands, and the third guy was pounding on me with the cable.
On your back?
On my back. Everything was open. Everything. Everything. But I never felt... I felt nothing. I was so in shock, I felt nothing. All I just heard, boom, boom, all the time. I had no pain. Then I thought that's enough, and I threw them off. And I jumped up, and the last guy, he hit me over the head with, and I had a head like this. And I fell down, and I played dead. But I wasn't dead. I wasn't fainted either. I just claimed I was unconscious. I claimed, you know. I played. But my mom seen me next day in that camp. She collapsed. That's how horrible I looked. Now what kind of criminal was I when I was 14 when the war was finished, eh? That's the... Yeah, that's the life I went through. So in November, like I said, we had choice to leave. And the Pole took us to that station, and we went, I would say, the next. And we had to transfer in one place. And wherever we had to transfer, that's when the Poles start pounding at the young boys again, beating them up. And as soon as I got out of that car, we had to transfer step trains. I dropped on the sidewalk. The women piled all their belongings over me, and I was laying all day under the baggage. And the police walked always by my feet, and they never known I was laying there, hiding.
Because you're still recovering.
Yeah, from that beating there before, a few months, eh? So, and when the train came for us to go in again, the right train, well, they pushed everything to the side, and I jumped in. I never took one piece of baggage in. I was too scared, eh? So all the baggages were in except one sack was laying outside. And the people said, well, I wonder whose sack that is, you know, bag with whatever was in it. And Mom looked out. She says, that's ours. She asked me to go and get it. And I said, no way. I said, I'm not going. I said, leave it. So somebody else jumped out and brought it in. I was too scared. So then we came on the German border line. But the Pole that we worked for, he knew that we eventually going to get out. So he asked us if we would harvest 1 acre of sugar beets after hours. We worked till 9 o'clock in the evening, 5 in the morning.
When was this?
In 1945, in November.
Okay.
So he asked us whether we would harvest the sugar beets after hours. So we worked till 2 o'clock, maybe 1 o'clock. By hand, you have a fork and you take that sugar beet out, you know, lift it out. So we managed to do that, and he gave us 100 pounds of flour for that. Rye flour, yeah. And before we left, my mother baked bread out of that 100 pound of flour. And that's the bag I was carrying when we went from Poland to Germany.
She brought the food.
Yeah. But then, at the borderline, a train station came and they unloaded 12 right away dead ones, soldiers.
Did people die by you? Did you see people?
No, we all stayed alive, managed. But the feet were all swollen. You mean our family?
Well, or could you see other people?
Oh, yeah, naturally, right in front of me.
Oh.
A woman fell down in front of me, she ate dirt. And I stood and looked at it, and I couldn't help her. And she died right there. I walked away. Means nothing. And when we were traveling from, so we got across the border, well, we came to the borderline, and it says, next day we're going to go across to Germany. So my mom used to cut a slice of bread off and used to hand them out to the soldiers there, eh? The prisoners that came back from Russia already. And, you know, we just about starved there. We were stranded for 10 days. And we just about didn't make it. Well, the bread was gone pretty soon, what was left, and hardly. I used to stand in line to get some soup at the camp, 5 o'clock in the morning till 5 in the evening, and I missed it. I was about that far away from the soup kettle, and it was empty. And I didn't get any soup.
What did your family do? What was Roman doing?
Well, Roman was a little guy. He was only, what was he, 4 years old? Six, actually.
Tiny kids survive without eating.
Whatever I scrounged, I was the one that had to scrounge everything.
Oh.
I was the provider. And then I got a cousin, Adolf. He lives in Hamilton. He was 3 years younger than me, and we used to run. And I used to find potato peels against the fence. They were black. And I took them home, and we cooked them. Honestly. And they taste good. And one time, we went again, and there was a carload, an open carload with potatoes. And the Russian guard was guarding that, yeah? He was walking back and forth. And Adolf and I went on top and start filling that sack, you know, potatoes. And the guard seen us, and he yelled at us to get off there, and I wouldn't move. I was so hungry, I said, forget it. Your life means nothing when you're in that stage, you know. You don't care no more. So anyway, the Russian, like, the car was like this. I was on this end, and Adolf someplace here. And he went on the end, and he took the machine gun, and this, right in front of me, he just let the burst go, you know. He shot, eh? Right in the potatoes, but he didn't hit me. And I never even looked up. I never even fizzed. Never even fizzed.
So numb to it all.
I just kept on filling. And then he swore in Russian language, and then he walked off. And the people just stormed on, and in no time that car was empty. There wasn't a potato left in that car. He walked away. He just gave up, you know. So then we got across to East Germany, and every time the train stopped, we looked at the car. Well, an old woman dead. Well, take her out. He put her in the snow, left her there, kept on going. So in one place, there were two old women sitting there. Oh, I said to Adolf, this cousin of mine, I said, this one is dead. I said, let's take her out. So we took her out and laid her in the snow. And I looked at the other one. I said, this one is dead too. I said, let's take her out also. So we dragged her out. We were all weak, you know. When I got up, it used to get black in front of my eyes. I don't know how long I didn't eat already. So, and after we set that woman down and she woke up, she says, children, I'm still alive. Yeah. Honestly, I dreamt about that woman for years. I felt bad that I took her out. But she probably died the next 5 minutes anyway. You know, there was nothing to eat. Eh? But like I said, it bothered me for years. So then we came to East Germany in camp. Then my sister went to a farmer and asked if he could hire her. So the lady said, okay. So I went with my sister to bring the shoes back. It was November, it was snow already. Eh? She had mom's shoes on, but she had no shoes, my sister. She was 3 years older than me. So while I was there trying to get the shoes back, to bring it back to camp, the lady asked me, she said, do you want to stay too? And I said, gladly. I said, I can work here for meals. So we both stayed with my sister, you know, at that camp. Mom was still in camp. And every day they were unloading dead ones and with the same wagon they brought back groceries, you know, bread. On the same wagon where they took the dead ones out and brought bread.
So once in a while, bread would come.
Oh, yeah, every day they used to bring in camp, yeah. Hmm. So anyhow, this lady used to give us sandwiches. She made three double sandwiches for 10 o'clock coffee break and three double for 3 o'clock coffee break. Hmm. So I said to my sister, we're only going to eat one. And we're going to hide too. That bread, you know. So at the end of the week, we had a whole sack full. Well, that means four double sandwiches every day we were hiding. It was cold outside, it was snow. So there was frost. Eh? And the sandwiches were laid with liver sausage or other sausage. You know, not with jam, just sausage, you know. The lady was good to us. Yeah, and then I took that bread to the camp. It was only a few miles to run, maybe a couple of miles at the most. And I gave it to Mom, and she put it in the frying pan and kind of warmed it up, and that's what they were eating in camp.
They saved their food.
Yeah. So then a farmer came from a different province, and he knew that we were in camp, and he asked me to come and work for his sister-in-law in a different province. And I said, okay. So I went with him. And while I was in that other province, my mom was still in camp with the rest of the children. I went to the mayor and I said, I need a room. I need some. And my mom is in camp. I said, I have to bring my mother out. So he gave me a couple of rooms, you know, where my mom could move in. And I brought her over, and that's where they stayed till I had to run again. 1947 till 1947, see? 1947, I was on the list to go to Russia to the coal mine. And one of the officials in the office seen my name on the list, and he says, Walter, you better run because they're going to get you. And I knew if I go to Russia, I never come back.
So why would they take you away?
To work. To work. They wanted guys to work.
That's right. Didn't Stalin or
yeah,
Lenin,
they wanted labor.
He would get slave labor in the
yeah.
coal mines.
Yeah, the coal, yeah. And I was supposed to go to the coal mine to work for 3 months. Lord. Well, in Russia, 3 months is life.
Yeah.
So my mom lived a half a kilometer away and never had time to say goodbye. I used to work for a different woman. I just packed in and away I went.
But you got your mom set up in a place to live.
Yeah. She was there to live there. My older sister, two of my older sisters. Hulda was one of them, yeah. And then Tala, the other one. And there's the whole picture of the family. Us. So anyway, they stayed there. And when I got cut on the borderline again, they took my passport away. And after I got cut, well, they searched us and they took, like I said, they took my passport away. Then they told us to go back, pushed us back in the same train again to go back home. And they said, home, well, I knew where I was going. That was Siberia, eh? In 47. And I walked in this car here, and I walked out the other door. In the olden days, you know, you got your car. Now the doors are on the end, yeah? In the olden days, there was a boardwalk, and the door were in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And the police surrounded that one side, pushed all the people in. I was the first one in that car. And I looked out the other side. I said, what are you waiting for? I said, nobody here. And I jumped. Four guys behind me out of that same car, and we ran.
Straight into the...
Into the bush. There was small bush. And by the time the guard got through, and he was yelling at me to stop, or at us, and he was shooting, and I never even looked back. And I thought, you couldn't hit anyway. I didn't stop then. I just ran. I knew he couldn't hit because, you know, the small shrubs,
yeah.
The bullet would stray off.
Oh.
I was hoping, but it did,
oh,
you know.
It'd keep it from going straight at you.
Yeah, straight at us because we were between trees, you know. And the borderline was 1 kilometer away. So we got to the borderline, was a big sign. And I said, boys, be careful. I said, the guard could be hiding. So it was getting dark already. And we kind of looked around, didn't hear nobody. So we just dashed out of the bush and then crossed the line. And then there was a train station on the other side of the borderline. And matter of fact, there was 7 of us. 4 out of the same car where I jumped, and 3 people jumped from somewhere else. So it was 7 of us that made it across, out of 180. So anyway, some guys wanted to go to the station right away, and I heard that the Russians went to that station in West Germany and chased the people back again. Because they were running out of people, you know, to work. The young people were all running away. Eh? And I said, I'm not going to that station, I'm too scared. I said, they're going to probably catch us again there. And the English guards didn't do nothing. They didn't care. So I said, I'm going to walk to the next station. And the one guy says, well, how are we going to find the next station? I said, you dummy. I said, all we're going to walk is the tracks.
Oh, the tracks.
I said, walk the tracks. I said, I walked 8 kilometers and I found the next station. That's when I took the train. So I came to West Germany. No papers, no passport, nothing. I was a nobody. So the lady from the farm, my brother was working there, yeah? The oldest brother, Carl, he's already dead. And that's where I went. In Cologne, that means the Rhine Valley, yeah? West Germany. So the lady asked me if I had a passport. I said no. And she says, well, you have to go and get yourself a passport. So I went, but I took Carl along. We had to travel by train. And she gave us a can of meat. She says, in case you have a problem with, and you know, a can of meat those days, it was worth more than gold. Because gold you can't eat, but you can eat the meat. Eh? I've seen money laying all over the streets. You can't eat money, and you can't buy nothing with it. Yeah. So anyhow, she gave us that can of meat, and she says, in case you have a problem with the officials trying to get my passport, give one of the officials that meat, you know. And believe it or not, this bothered me from 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 at night, from one office to the next, from one office to the next. And one guy was asking a question, the next one, and the third one. Everybody asked this from different questions. I said, for you is yes, for you is no. You know, I really was hot. And then at the end, one guy says, how do I know that you're even a German? And I said, go and ask my brother outside. I was speaking loud, you know. My brother was always out the door. I told him, I said, you follow me and stay out the door, and I'm going to speak loud. So then he says, how are they going to find out that you're a German? And I said, go and ask my brother. So when they opened up the door and my brother walked in, and the one guy says, well, you can tell that they're brothers. So, but
your brother was in, was that when he was in the army? And he was,
he was released already from the army. That was in 47. He was already released from the army, back from prison, and he stayed in West Germany, worked on the farm.
Oh, he went to prison also?
Oh, yeah, he was in prison too, but not too long. But he was in English prison, yeah. Because he was fighting England, yeah.
I when I was over in Germany with Ronnie, when we went over there in 1981,
yeah.
82, Uncle Carl gave me a really neat picture of him in his full uniform.
I can show it to you today.
Oh, do you have that?
Yeah, I got it right in there.
Oh, great, because I gave it, I brought it.
So anyhow, coming back to finish my story, how it went.
Sorry.
The English guy asked me for my age, and I said, I'm 17, and he yelled at me through the interpreter, yeah? He says, you look at least like 25, and I said, sorry. I said, I'm only 17. So anyhow, when I brought my brother in, called my brother in, you know, to verify that we're brothers. And then they said, well, you can see that they're brothers. And then that last guy, he asked me, he had the nerve. He says, did you bring something for me? And I said, yeah. And I said, I'm going to eat it alone. I said, you ain't going to get it. So on the way home, we still had that can of meat, yeah, that I was supposed to give one of the officials. And I thought they were pestering me already for 12 hours. And that was the last guy. He's not going to get it now. So on the way back, Carl had a pocket knife, and we cut the can open, and with the pocket knife, we fished the meat out, and we ate it. So then I stayed there till Marta and Ted and his mother came to their father, yeah, their father. Marta's father was in Canada already since 1929. And he left, he came alone, and he left a wife with 7 children behind.
To earn money and make a...
He's trying to earn money. Trying to earn money and bring the family over later. Well, 1930, the depression started here. So he never could raise the money. 1939, we got moved from Poland to Germany. So that was, the war started again, eh? So that was out of the question. And 2 of my cousins stayed in, eh? Got killed, like Marta's brothers, 2 of them. 2 of them died, 2 of them died, 2 of them got killed in the army. So when they, and then 1948, they start to get the papers going to come to Canada. But my uncle still had to lend the money from an Italian guy. He still didn't have enough money to pay for their fare. And the fare was $205 a piece. He didn't have enough money for... See, Marta and her son came first. She came first, you know. Marta had a son as a girl, yeah. And he was a... Siegfried, you remember him? Yeah, he was a... At the end, he was a professor, you know, in the Camrose Bible School. He was a teacher, yeah. He was a nice guy. But anyhow, so Martha came first, and then Martha's mother came after, and then Ted came towards the end. Well, I wrote a letter to my uncle since I was alone. Oh, in the meantime,
And Rudolph.
Oh, Rudolph was way late.
Oh, okay.
Nobody knew about Rudolph then.
But
everybody
Carl
thought Rudolph was dead.
There.
Huh?
Carl stayed over there.
No. Yeah, Carl had, in the meantime, gone back to East Germany. Carl was with me in West Germany, yeah, my brother, yeah?
Yeah, but wouldn't Carl, I mean, you were a self-preservationist. You knew to get out of there.
It's yeah, like, and Carl wanted to see my parents.
Yeah.
He hadn't seen them since last time he was home on leave. I don't know, 1944 sometimes.
Did he feel safer since he was in the army to travel and not have to go to Siberia?
Well, he took a chance. I wouldn't have done it. I would have never done it. But Carl wanted a girlfriend. I had a girlfriend. She was 9 years older than me. We just went for fun, you know. I said to my friend, I said, you take the young one, I'll take the old one. I said, she knows I'm not going to marry her anyway. I said, we just go for like companion. And my brother, he was looking for a girl. And I said, I got a decent girl. She was a nice girl, you know, my sister-in-law. She's not on that picture no more. Because she died at the age of 55. So anyway, Carl went home to see the parents. That means, and meet that girl. I wrote the girl a letter that my brother is coming and going to meet you. My aim was just for him to see the parents. That's all I wanted him to see. And then come back again. But he didn't. He stayed and married that girl. So I was all alone in West Germany, and when I was a bad one. So when Ted came and Martha, and I wrote a letter to my uncle. See, when he immigrated here, I wasn't even born yet. So I wrote him a letter that I would like to come to Canada, and he wrote me back. He says, well, he hasn't got no money for me to pay for my fare, but if I'm willing to work for a farmer, and the farmer will vouch for me and pay my fare too, if I'm willing to work a year for that farmer in return. So I said, what's a year, you know? So I agreed. So then I came in 1949 to Lacombe, which is 80 miles south of Edmonton. Got off the train. Nobody there to pick me up. Didn't know the name of the farmer. People asked me where I was going, and I shrugged my shoulders. I said, me no speak English. I just did like that, you know. I couldn't speak English. I said, me no speak English. So finally, I thought, what am I going to do now? So 20 minutes later, a little farmer came, and he says, my name is Otto, he says, and you're going to be working for me. He was a German guy, eh? So we took off on the farm, got to the farm, and I looked at that house. When I got to the farm, my impression was going back to Russia again, 10 years back in time. That's how it looked, you know? And I thought, boy, oh boy, these people are way behind here. And the big joke was they had a 16-year-old girl and then some boys, smaller ones. And when the kids seen me walk in the yard, they all hightailed up the stairs, upstairs. And the first impression I had, and I thought, gee, they're wild here.
They ran from me.
Later I found out why, because somebody else was there before me. A few months, the farmer had another guy working for him. And he gave everybody a hug, and the kids didn't want to get hugged from me. So that's why they ran away. So then I worked for that farmer from August till Christmas. And at Christmas time, the farmer came and asked me if I can stay for meals only. Can't afford to pay me. That was 1949, 50. And I said, Otto, I said, I had enough to eat in Germany, and I got paid. And I said, if Canada's that poor, I said, no dice. I said, no way, I'm going to work for nothing. I said, if I work for nothing, I said, I go back to my uncle, which I went to Martha's parents, and I stay there during the winter. Well, I tried to stay there during the winter time and help uncle, you know, milk the cows and feed the pigs for nothing, just for meals. In the meantime, a farmer, and Ottawa used to pay me $1 a day. That was my wage. That was $30 a month in 1949. So then another farmer came, was also German, at my uncle's place, and asked me to come and work for him, and he was going to offer me $75 a month. And I thought, oh, that's 2.5 times more, you know. So I really liked that place. He was a Lutheran, she was a Seventh-day Adventist, so we celebrated Saturday and Sunday. We didn't work those 2 days. And they had no children, and I was the only child. And I lived like a king there. But in spring, the other farmer wrote back a letter to me to come back and finish my year. Because I agreed, eh? It wasn't on paper, it was all verbally. So I went back, I left that farm, and I went back. And when I walked in the house, he kind of snarled at me. He says, why didn't you come 2 weeks sooner? He says, I needed you 2 weeks sooner. And I said, too bad, isn't it? I said, the other guy paid me $75 a month. I said, not 30. And I said, furthermore, I'm not going to work for $30 no more. So we kind of agreed on 60. Because he paid my fare, so I thought, oh, I'll be a little lenient to him. And then I worked till July. And that day it was hot. I was pulling a cultivator. And one of his boys was steering it. It was a little cultivator, you know. We were making a lawn, garden. So he didn't want the horse to tramp with his big feet, so I was pulling it. So anyway, then we were doing some sidewalk work, and the horse kind of swatted flies away and ripped the harness a bit. And he snarled at me and told me that I didn't put the harness on right. You know, underneath the belly, there's some crossing there. You probably don't know, but anyway. Uh-huh. And I said, if you would have had a decent harness, that would have never happened, I told the farmer. It was kind of all junk, you know. So then he sent me to pick something up, and I went, and he yelled at me to run. Just mean, kind of, you know. And when he yelled at me to run, I just turned around, and I walked in front of him, and I said, Otto, I said, you ain't big enough to make me run. I said, nobody ever made me run. I said, neither will you. And I said, furthermore, I said, we're finished. I said, this is my last day. That was just before lunch, at noon. You know? I couldn't eat no more, you know. I just choked. So then he made me sign a statement that I went on my own, didn't finish the year. He typed out, and you know, wrote out a letter, and I signed it. And I said, okay. I said, you can have it. And apparently he lent the money for my fare. He didn't have it. So he charged me interest for what money he had to borrow from somebody. I said, that's fine too. So when I walked away from him, I had $5 in my pocket. That's all I had. But I cleared my fare, yeah? In the meantime, 10 months to work back $255. But before I left, one day he asked me if I marry his daughter. She was a nice kid, you know, but for some reason I couldn't stand the old guy. So I would. He says, if I marry his daughter and stay another 5 years with him, then he gives me 160 acres of land. And I said, Otto, I said, you keep your daughter and your quarter. 160 acres was a quarter then. It still is, eh? And I said, when it comes time to get married, I said, I'll find one. So that's why I keep laughing. I said, Sarah, when I married her, she had $20. There you go. See, there you go. That's why Sarah sometimes, she says, give me half, she says, and then. And I said, okay, I'll give you 10 bucks. I said, you brought in 20. See, when we got married, her parents were incapable of making the wedding for us. You know, hosting it like that. And they had no money, eh? So I paid for everything. I did.
You had another job before you met her.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I went to, before I met her, yeah. Matter of fact, I was still on the farm when I seen her first, when she immigrated, the first day. And she had to go on top, the pulpit, and read a Bible verse.
was your head.
And I said to Marta, Marta was at that farmer too. She was working there for the same farmer. I said to Marta, I said, gee, there was a nice girl today in church. But I said, I think she's too old for me.
I had 1 year there.
We're only 5 months apart, you know. She's 5 months younger than me, so. And then that was in 1950 when I seen her. And 2 years later we were married.
So tell me this, then you became...
Do you think he's going to be any help? I don't know.
Lutheran? You, Sarah was Lutheran, and then you were?
Yeah. No, our parents were Church of God already back in Germany.
In Germany?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me this.
They were Lutherans before.
And then they became Church of God?
They became Church of God, yeah. I still see Church of God, we get baptized after you converted, yeah? Like when you believe. I got baptized when I was 20. Sarah, I don't know what age she was, but
so,
38.
Oh, with Church of God, it's when you say you want to be baptized, or when you...
When you believe in God, when you
okay.
say when you convert
when you say,
then after that you do baptize, not before.
Well, that explains it then. I think Roman's not baptized.
Well, Roman isn't baptized, no.
Well, how are you going to get him baptized? He needs to be baptized.
No, Roman isn't baptized. Because my parents were Church of God already then, yeah.
Were they baptized? They did as adults.
They did as adults,
yeah,
yes. After they believed in the church.
My dad didn't want to go to Canada.
Church of God,
I
yeah,
said,
movement.
But if they were Lutheran,
the Lutheran, yeah,
they
at
were
first, okay, maybe. Well, those days in Russia, everything was upside down. Don't take it for real.
Yeah,
that didn't go like here, you know. Once you're born, you automatically. A lot of times, like Sarah had a brother, he was already 3 months old before they went and registered him.
Oh.
Or it was 9 months or something like that old. Because he used to cry so much and they thought he's going to die anyway. It's no use registering him.
Oh.
It's no joke.
Wow. Well, do you think there's any way to talk to Roman and somehow get him baptized?
Yeah, they had a life, I'm telling you. And that poor girl that I was supposed to marry on the farm, and she married another guy. We stayed at his parents' place in Edmonton when we rented the basement. He was from the church too. And so was Esther, she was. And she lived till 24. After the third child, she was feeding the third child, breastfeeding, and all of a sudden, boom, she just keeled over, a blood clot too. Died of a blood clot.
We had a family friend who did too. With her
matter of fact, when they moved into Edmonton, when they got married, I hooked them up the gas stove, you know, rigged up a kitchen for them, you know, helped her out.
That was when
since I knew her from the farm, you know, I just.
Ula, yeah.
Yeah, she didn't live long. 24 years and that was it.
Do you miss the farm?
I actually had another girl. We were going to get married, but she was in Milwaukee.
Really?
From East.
Did you meet her?
Well, in Germany. We were on the same yard in East Germany.
Okay.
And when I left for Canada, they went to Milwaukee a few years later.
That's right, some people did.
Because
go
she
to
had
the
an
States.
Uncle there, yeah. It was way before the war there. So they were here. Yeah. But I couldn't get over. She was 10 days older than me, and I just couldn't get over that.
That's hard.
It bugged me.
That must have been hard, because it was your tie from Germany, too.
Yeah, yeah. It just, that 10 day, you know, it kind of bugged me. A man had to be older than a woman. So
you mean this age difference?
Age-wise, yeah.
Whoa.
See, my dad wasn't in favor that I marry Sarah. I was too young. I was, my dad, you know. And nothing against Sarah.
Oh, okay.
But I was too young. I was 22 when we got married. Eh? And he figures I should have waited more or longer.
You courted her for 2 years.
Yeah, and I wasn't going in room and board when I was alone. I wasn't going to room and board. I used to batch myself. I did my own cooking and washing and everything. So I had no problem with cooking. I still don't have today. I mean, I can cook.
So
I thought, well, I'm not going to wait any longer because then Sarah gets too old.
Well, that's a long time to wait when you're in a courtship.
That's right, yeah, and no, I didn't believe in that, so.
And then if you wait much longer, then you might not, you know.
Something, yeah.
Well, then, when did you wind up?
The joke was, there was another friend of mine, he wanted Sarah the worst way. He says, if it's the Lord's will, he says, I'm going to marry Sarah. I said, okay. I said, by the way, I said, I have another one too already. I used to go with a different girl. She was 5 years younger than me. But I was looking for a woman like my... I was comparing my mother with a girl. My mother had golden hands. She could do anything with her hands. And that's what I was looking for. And Sarah matches that, fits that. And the other girl, she couldn't even sew a button on. And she's still like that today, this woman. She's a nice woman. She married another guy, yeah? But for some reason, she still holds it against Sarah, the other woman, you know?
When did you wind up going through training for the job that you had for the next 50 years?
Okay. When I married Sarah, I was still a laborer. We built Canadian Chemical Plant. That was the first chemical plant that was built around Edmonton.
That's dangerous.
Beg pardon?
Dangerous to be working at a chemical
plant. Well, yeah, on construction. I was on construction. Still construction. Took about 3 years. 2.5, yeah. So a little over 2 years. Close to 3 years. Anyway, I was in labor again. And the pipe fitters were there, and the plumbers were there, and I was digging the ditches for the plumbers so they can do their soil groundwork, and the pipe fitters, you know. And my aim was, I wanted to be a pipe fitter, you know. I was trying to get in, you know, the worst way. And I told the labor foreman, I said, this is no good. I said, we can't stay as laborers. Because when I came from Germany, I came from the farm. I had no trade, eh? So all of a sudden, one day, superintendent came from the pipe fitters and he wanted me to come and work for them and come in the office, write the material out, read off the material of the blueprints, write it on a requisition and get the material shipped in, and then he can put the crew to work. So I said to the superintendent, I said, how do you expect me to do those things? I said, I can't read, I can't write. I said, I got no English school ever, only 8 hours, night class I had while I was on the farm. And the guy told me I'm a funny creature anyway. He says, in the books I did everything right, and when he asked me something, I didn't understand him. I couldn't understand him. But when the books, you know, came to fill in, well, they teach us just like little grade one kids, you know, table. They put the T and then a dash and then a B, and then you had to fill in the empty spots. Well, I did in the books, I did okay. But when he asked me something, I didn't like that, you know. Only 8 hours I had this class, that's all. So I told the superintendent, I said, I can't read, I can't write. I said, no way. I said, I can't handle it. Well, he says, if you're no good, he says, you can always go back on the shovel. So I thought, well, I might as well try it. So I got in there. Of course, I had to change clothes. Instead of going with dirty clothes to work, I kind of went with better clothes, you know. But I only had one pair of pants, better ones. So my friends that were still in the labor gang, they kind of became jealous, you know, that I was in the same company bus, you know, a little dressed up, and the other ones with the work clothes, eh? So, but besides that, I was there 10 days, they gave me a raise. I was there that was first year, well, they signed me on as first year apprentice. After 10 days, I got a raise, second year apprentice. After 10 days again, I was third year apprentice. After 10 days again, I was fourth year apprentice. So in 30 days, I was jumping 3 years ahead in wages. Like. And they signed me up in the union, and the business agent came. And you know what language they speak, eh? Construction language. He says, Walter, whose ass are you sucking, he says, to get so much money? And I got scared, and I thought, well, now they're going to throw me out again, back in the labor gang. And I said, why, is it against the law? He says, heck no. He said, they give you a general foreman rate. But he was wondering how I jumped so fast, you know.
Is it because they thought you were reliable and strong?
I must have done the work right. The guy showed me how to read a plan. You know, let's say you got the line showing. 20-inch line or whatever size it was. And then when the line was down, he showed me where to look for another page to see the downcomer, and I had to write off whether it takes a T or a flange or an elbow, and the size of bolts and the length of the bolts. And I wrote a requisition out, filled that all in. I gave it to a pipe fitter who already had his ticket, and he had to walk and take it to the warehouse. And when the warehouse shipped the material, I checked the material out, if it was okay. And then I told the superintendent, line so-and-so is ready to start working on it.
Okay.
And every week I had to write a progress report, how far we're advanced. I supplied material for 90 men. I was busy, but I enjoyed every minute of it.
And you were, what, 23 by then?
I was 20, well, when I started, I was 21.
Young guy.
I was 21, yeah. So then I stayed 3.5 years in that office, and I wrote my ticket, I passed it. It was 5 of us wrote, 2 of us made it. The other Canadian guys, they had somebody writing for them, and I wrote myself. I thought it was little as English as I knew, but I passed it. So then I had 6 months to go before I got my full wages, you know, journeyman wages. But I didn't know how to tread a pipe yet, because I was working in the office all the time. And I said to the superintendent, I said, this is getting too far. I knew more about the whole plant, as far as blueprints were concerned, or piping, than the superintendent himself. I used to follow every line. Eh? But I didn't know how to fit, how to cut a thread. And I said, that's it. I said, I'm going out in the field. I said, I need field experience.
No, you put one on the.
I said, before I get my ticket, my full ticket, I said, I must have field experience. So they kind of had a good heart. And I went out in the field. In the meantime, the chemical plant was finished. And they laid us off, and then they were looking for people on maintenance. And I got in again on maintenance. And I got signed on with the company. I had a job for life in that chemical plant. You know, they knew me from construction. So I was with them. But after I stayed 51 to 6 years total, and I was losing weight. I was going down the chemical. It was very dangerous. Eh? I was a shift mechanic. I was a millwright and a pipe fitter. So we were, whenever it came something to do with the spinning machine, they were making nylon threads. You know, they had the spools and the machinery had to be fixed, and I was doing all that. And it was very dangerous to handle, you know, to breathe that in, all that acid, you know, acetic acid, sulfuric acid, caustic, and you name it. And I was losing, and the partner that was working with me, every 6 months we had to go to see a doctor about health. And my partner was told, 6 months, he says, you're dead or get out. Got a choice. And I thought, well, if it hurt him, how about me? We were both always together, same job, breathing in the same chemicals. So then, I was losing weight, and I thought, well, then I went and got my, which I went against the law, really. I got myself a job first, which is against the union rule, but they didn't know that.
Oh, before having to just leave.
Yeah, before I left, you know, I went and got the job first, and then I walked back in the office, and I said, I'm leaving. And they tried to talk me out of it, you know, they wanted to keep me, really, and I said, no way. He says, well, you're going to get pension, and you're going to get this, and I said, I don't think I'm going to be live long enough to collect. So I went on construction, worked 1 year on construction as a journeyman, and then I got set up as a foreman and general foreman, and I've been supervisor ever since, for the last 31 years. I was in control. I was in charge of jobs.
So did you guys start up your family when you were at the chemical plant?
Yeah, yeah. Well, when we got married, I was still labor at the chemical plant, yeah. We're still building it. And when I bought my first car, it was 1958, I bought my first car. Till then I had none. But I had my house paid off. That house that you guys were in, where Ronnie used to live in it?
Yeah.
It was a brand new house then when I bought it. It was only 3 months old, that house. And I had it paid off cash before I bought my first car, and paid cash for it. And I didn't buy before. I didn't buy on payments. I don't believe in payments.
Things like that.
So in my case, I paid very little mortgage. Very little.
So that's how you're able to move into the
end. And then I sold that. Well, I built another house. And we rented out that first one, yeah? I built another house. And then I sold that other house, and I built the last house. That was... Oh, too bad I got no picture here. So that... And then when I sold the last house, I moved here. But I wasn't going to move from that last house. I built it to stay.
How did you decide to leave your last house?
You mean decided to move?
Yeah.
Sarah was the cause. She wanted to move where it's, where the fruit is growing, where it's
retire
warmer.
Retire where it's a little nicer, prettier, yeah. And better.
Well, let's
weather.
Face it. The winters are like Europe here, eh? But in Edmonton, it's like Siberia. Cold. I mean, it's very cold. And those days, in those days in Lacombe, well, you know what 60 below is.
No.
Well, I know, but I mean, according to the thermometer, you know how far it goes down.
Oh, yeah. That's Siberia.
The birds couldn't fly. The birds couldn't fly. That's how stiff it was, everything.
Did you sort of agree with your dad saying that Edmonton reminded you a little bit of Siberia?
No, not really, no. I don't knock Edmonton because that was my, it gave me my bread and butter, yeah? That was my my main jobs there. And I liked my work. I really enjoyed
it. Yeah, and he didn't have any ties.
Nothing, no. He had
economically,
nothing, no.
Except for just family members
yeah.
there. And besides, he had family in Germany.
He had the family, yeah, the children only.
The girls.
The girls, yeah. And Roman and Bruna was there yet.
Roman was still there?
Oh, he was still there, yeah. Just a minute. Not when he came here, I'm sorry.
Who is this?
No.
Oh,
because Mom died 55, eh?
Yeah.
Roman came later. Well, he got... Roman was still at home.
After your mom died?
After Mom died, yeah.
Did you bring Roman over?
My sister paid for him. Olga.
Oh.
The one that's in Kitchener. She... they signed the papers for him. And I brought my sister over, the one. That was another story. She lived in East Germany. They lived in East Germany.
That was the wrong side of Germany to live on. East Germany.
Yeah, that was the wrong side, yeah. But they were there while I was in West Germany. Anyway, and while I was already in Canada, she went Berlin window shopping. You know, she was about 40... about 25 miles from Berlin, they lived. Anyway, she went window shopping, and the guy was watching her. She crossed this street, one street, another street, and this guy was watching her, you know, and he says, lady, he says, where are you going? Oh, she says, I'm window shopping. He says, if you cross that street once more, he says, you cross the border for the third time.
Really?
And she says, where am I now? And he says, on the west side, and that was it. She didn't go back no more. She went to the police station and told him that she has a brother in Canada. That's where she wants to go. And they put her in camp, flew her over to West Germany, and they notified me, and I got the papers going, and 3 months later she was here. 10 months after that she was married. The same with Rosie. Rosie was here 10 months, the younger one, yeah? 10 months after she was married too. But Rosie also, Olga, my sister from Kitchener, brought Rosie over, yeah. She moved right away to Kitchener.
Was Linda...
Linda didn't want to come.
Was she already married, or just didn't want
to
leave?
No, she didn't want to leave. Linda was different type of person. She was always quiet for some... I like that kid in a way. Olga was a kind of... more of But Linda, no. She was always... herself like it. Even when she was little, sometimes we used to eat supper or lunch. Where's Linda? Linda was sitting someplace in the corner. Didn't say a word.
You were
You know, she's always kind of hurt me when I heard that, when I got the news that she passed away. You know, kind of.
Yeah, she had somebody with her at least.
Yeah. Well, she had a bad husband to begin with. He was a drunk. So then he drank himself to death, actually. So he died, I think he was 43 years old.
And then she had a son, though, right?
No, she had nothing. She raised Bruno's son.
That's right.
Bruno had a son, but Linda raised him. She was like a mother to him. Oh, Linda had no children.
Oh, okay.
Linda couldn't have children.
You better let those people go to bed.
Because she was undernourished in Poland, and something wasn't developed.
Yeah.
She could
so
have got.
How are you making out?
She could have got operated and bear children, but she didn't want.
Okay.
So she had. So she raised Roman's son, actually. I mean Bruno's son. Yeah. And he's no good till today. Not much.
What does he look like? Does he look like?
I don't. Well, I think we had a picture, but where is it?
Who?
Bruno's son. No, he looks different.
No, he looks different. He look, doesn't look like a belter at all.
No.
They
no.
have the high cheekbone and then no. He was a scrawny runt.
Yeah, he was.
You know, because I don't know, he never. Either he didn't eat much or.
They spoiled him from day one, actually, that kid, you know. Because he had. His mother left him when he was little. He was only a few months old when his mother took off, you know. Erica, I used to know her. I mean, I met her, you know, when they were still together, like. So then, like I said, Linda kind of raised him, eh? And then when he needed something, Linda gave him all the time, and gave him, and he spoiled him and didn't want to work.
And he still doesn't.
He still doesn't, that's right.
But she provided except, for him because she left him her things, where she lived.
Well, yeah, well, he, when she died, he sold everything, you know. He took possession and sold all her belongings on the flea market, trying to get money, eh? I guess Roman met him. I didn't. I only seen him when he was a little kid. After that, I never seen him again.
Now he has to earn his own living.
Yeah. I heard he's married and they have a child, so. And she doesn't want to work either, so. Excuse me.
Sorry, you must be tired.
I don't know, I didn't sleep very much last night, so.
Yeah.
Oh. I took 2 tablets already, so maybe it's a little bit better now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll be able to lay. Do you have a lay down without being in pain? Do you have a special bed? Because they make so many beds now, the foam ones, so your pressure.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know my case if that would help much.
Hey, is that on? Lauren, do you know how to work that?
You mean that thing was on?
I don't know. Yeah.
Ouch.
Oh, dear. Ketchup alone. Ketchup? Can you tell if it's on or off?
Yeah, it's on.
It was on?
What a joke.
I don't know. We'll see.